Becoming the British High Commissioner to New Zealand was part of the plan for Laura Clark. Her husband is a Kiwi, and when the time was right, she told everyone who mattered that she wanted that role. Well, she took on the job, along with the supplementary title of Governor of Pitcairn Islands in 2018, moved into the official residence, Homewood in Karori, with her three young children, and got underway. We invited her into our Wellington studio to tell us about where she came from, what it's like to have to continually explain Brexit to New Zealanders, and of course, the purpose of bookmarks, to tell us about some of her favourite things. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Good. Thanks for your time today.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Couple of years in, eh? How are you enjoying your new home?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so almost 2 years in. It goes so fast, but absolutely loving it. It's every bit as good as I thought and hoped it would be. And the family are all lovely and settled. And there's just so much going on between the UK and New Zealand at the moment. So it's a complete privilege to be doing the job.
What's the job?
The job is, at its core, about explaining New Zealand to the UK, explaining the UK to New Zealand, and building trust and cooperation on things that matter to us both. Now, that might be increasing trade between our countries. It might be how we work together on global issues like tackling climate change. And it's also about helping build connections so that we can deliver benefits for both our countries. That might be science and innovation collaboration, or it might be, you know, sort of stealing each other's policy ideas. So there's a whole range. There's never-ending amount of things for us to talk about and learn from each other.
Do you have a list of things that you want to achieve under those headings and you're ticking them off, or are you doing general relationship building and positive constructive work and hoping that good things will come out of it?
Yeah, so it's a bit of both, really. One is just representing the UK writ large. So that's the people of the four countries that make up the UK, you know, our arts, our culture, sport, of course. Sports diplomacy is a big bit of it. But I've also got some very clear priorities of things that I'm trying to achieve. So, you know, one is about increasing trade and investment connections between our countries, boosting those business links. The other is about how we work together. I mentioned climate change, so that's a really big priority. For us in the UK, we're going to be hosting COP, so the big UN climate change conference next year. So how we work together on climate change in the Pacific, but also more widely. And then I've also got a big priority around building and increasing the UK's relationship with Te Ao Māori, with Māoridom. And there's a lot of work to do there. But there's all sorts of things that also come up, you know, so in the foreign policy space and security, as you know, we're both members of the Five Eyes partnership. So there's a lot going on, and there's never a boring day, and no 2 days are alike either. So that's what makes it so much fun.
Did you have a mentor in the diplomacy space, someone who said this is how to do it well, and give me a call if you ever need any tips?
Yeah, so I've drawn on lots of people actually for advice. One of the best bits of advice I got was you have to be prepared at any moment, at any time, in any setting to give a speech. Yeah. And that's perfectly true. Yeah. And in fact, the other day, a friend invited me to something and she said, and you won't even have to give a speech. So always being prepared, you know, without any notice to give a speech is a big part of it. And then another really useful bit of advice that someone gave me was, don't think you have to try and do it all at once, because I'm a bit of a maximizer. There's so much I want to get done, and I have to consciously try and slow down sometimes and not push myself too much.
How is your te reo Māori, speaking of speeches?
Kia te ako te reo Māori. I'm learning, and I can't, you know, do proper kōrero, but I'm going to do my mihi pretty well. I always start and end my speeches with te reo, and I'm learning. It's a work in progress. But what I love about that is, you know, as you learn the language, you learn more and more of the language, and you understand more of the concepts of te ao Māori, you know, things like kaitiakitanga, manaakitanga, it really is an insight into, you know, what is quite a different worldview, a different way of thinking things. And, you know, I think a lot that we can learn in terms of understanding more about those values underpinning things.
Yeah, we might come back to the relationship with Te Ao Māori. I have to ask, how's the sports diplomacy going?
Well, it's getting a bit embarrassing now, actually, I've got to say. You know, the latest super over, I was slightly sort of looking at the carpet and not trying to make much of it, because we had, as you know, that incredibly tense Cricket World Cup final, which was extraordinary. And I was in London at the time, and then the rugby very, very recently, and then the latest cricket set too. So, but you know,
I want to stay in Karori for a few months.
Exactly. But, you know, it's a fun part of the job. It's something that lots of people can relate to. And we actually, both for the Men's World Cup football, Women's World Cup football, for this Rugby World Cup, we often host screenings of matches at my residence, which is a really nice, you know, just way of gathering people together. Though I have to say the England-New Zealand rugby match was a little bit tense, and we had far more All Blacks supporters in the crowd than we did England supporters.
How old are your kids?
They are 9, 8, and 5.
Oh, well done.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yeah,
so and are they Kiwi kids?
They are Kiwi kids. They're sort of Kiwi Pom kids, I suppose, aren't they? So they've got New Zealand citizenship from their dad and, of course, British from me. They've lived in London, South Africa, London, now New Zealand. And they're at that lovely stage where, you know, they still love me and they're a lot of fun, but they don't need us to do everything for them. So, yeah, it's the most wonderful stage in life.
Very sweet how you and Toby got together.
Yeah.
Will you share the story quickly?
So we're both at Cambridge, but we never actually met. And then but we used to slightly see each other around, so we knew of each other, but weren't ever introduced. And then I met his brother. I was doing my master's at the LSE and met his brother. And after a while, he said, "Oh, you went to Cambridge. My little brother Toby went to Cambridge." And I remember thinking straight away, I know exactly who that is, I thought to myself. And I thought, and I wonder if we meet, and if we meet, if we'll get on, and if we'll go out. And then the rest is kind of history. He came along to a party that I was having with his brother. And we hit it off from there.
Very good. Many parents will know this problem, that when it comes to music in the car, your kids get a vote. Have they had any influence in your choices for bookmarks today?
Well, do you know what? Initially they did. And then I thought, actually, I need to pare it back. Because, you know, if it's all about the kids, there's a lot of... Actually, we're getting a little bit out of the Disney phase at the moment. We've been listening to a lot of Hamilton the musical with them. We listen to a lot of Ed Sheeran, Dua Lipa, that sort of thing. But I thought, actually, I should focus on the music that really, you know, is important to me, as well as what is the democratic outcome in the car. But of course, I love all of it.
Okay, so we'll play something from Hamilton first. And have you seen this musical?
Yes. So we went to see it in July this year. We had this, Toby and I, my husband and I, had this brilliant day in London where we went, met the Queen, had a private audience with the Queen, and then we went to a pub and watched the cricket, and then we had a nice lunch, and then we went to see Hamilton the musical. And it is just an extraordinarily powerful musical right from the word go.
And that must be one of your best days, was it?
It was a fabulous day. It was a completely fabulous day. Perfect weather, you know, English summer at its best. And it's, you know, it's a really great soundtrack also that the kids also love as well, and with so much history in it as well.
Let's listen to a bit of the track, My Shot. This is the choice of Laura Clark, who is our guest on Bookmarks today.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I'ma get a scholarship to King's College. I probably shouldn't brag, but dag, I'm amazed and astonished. The problem is I got a lot of brains but no polish. I gotta holler just to be heard with every word I drop knowledge. I'm a diamond in the rough, a shining piece of coal. Trying to reach my goal, my power of speech unimpeachable. Only 19, but my mind is older. These New York City streets get cold. I shoulder every burden, every disadvantage I've learned to manage. I don't have a gun to brandish. I walk these streets famished. The plan is to fan this spark into a flame. But damn, it's getting dark, so let me spell out the name. I am the A-L-E-X-A-N-D-E-R. We are meant to be a colony that runs independently. Meanwhile, Britain keeps shitting on us endlessly. Essentially, they tax us relentlessly. Then King George turns around, runs a spell.
defendant's spree. He ain't never gonna set his descendants free. So there will be a revolution in this century. Enter me,
he says in parentheses.
Don't be shocked when your history book mentions me. I will lay down my life if it sets us free. Eventually you'll see my ascendancy. And I am not thrown away my shot. I am not thrown away my shot. Hey yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy and hungry. And I'm not thrown away my shot. I am not thrown away my shot. I am not thrown away my shot. Hey yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy and hungry. And I'm not thrown away my shot.
I dream of life without the monarchy. The unrest in France will lead
RNZ
to
National. It's from the Hamilton soundtrack, and it's the choice of Laura Clark, who is British High Commissioner to New Zealand. You're quite impressive, Laura. Do you think you'll go back and run the UK at some point?
I very much doubt it. I'm wanting to find work that's fulfilling and where I feel I can make a difference.
Surely that means politics at some point.
Oh, I don't know.
Everyone you wanted this job. What job are you telling people you want next?
I did. I'm still weighing up my options. And the wonderful thing is I've done 2 years, but I have at least another 2 years here in New Zealand. So I'm at that lovely stage where we're settled, we're relaxed, we're enjoying it and not having to worry too much about what happens next.
Are you sick of talking to people about Brexit?
It's part of my job. So, you know, always happy
I'm sick of parts of my job.
There we go. Well, look, I always am happy to explain what's going on in the UK. And certainly our politics is much more interesting than perhaps we're used to. And it's bumpy and there's a lot going on. But I think in a way, the joy of this job is, yes, that's a big part of it. But there's so much else that we have to talk about as well. And so there's a real range of things that we can talk about and do.
My problem with Brexit is every time I understand it, something changes. That must be the same for you as well, right?
You've got to keep on top of it. And the sort of kind of challenging thing of the time difference here, of course, is that when things happen in British politics, things happen in the evening, then they all go to bed. And at that point, I'm getting up in the morning. And there was this wonderful moment when I was on the morning report with Susie Ferguson. And it had been arranged for a long time. But just as I was on air, one of the withdrawal agreements was being voted down in Parliament. And so it was like, right now we're going to Parliament. And the Speaker, John Bercow, was going, the Noes have it, the Noes have it. And then it was, now back to Wellington. High Commissioner, what does this mean?
I've had approximately 5 seconds to think about
exactly.
It. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that interview. You did a good job. Hey, what do you love about the TV show The Crown? I see a third season's just about to drop.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, so it's I binge watch that on my own. You know, there's some things that you watch together, some you watch on your own. I love it. It's great TV. I don't take it too seriously, but it's fun. It's entertaining. The costumes look wonderful. And it also does fill in a few bits of history here and there. You know, obviously you've got to take it with a pinch of salt, but it's great. And when I remember consciously thinking when we had our private audience with the Queen, mustn't mention the Crown, mustn't mention that I know that from that episode in the Crown.
That's great.
Yeah, but no, it's cool.
The Olivia Colman as the Queen will be good.
Yeah, she'll be great. She's a fantastic actress. She
Have
really
you met her?
Is. No, I haven't, sadly. No, but she's great. Yeah.
But you like her in Fleabag as well.
I like her in Fleabag. Yeah, and I like Fleabag is just great TV, isn't
so
it?
Good. Can you explain it to people who haven't come across it?
So Fleabag is brilliant comedy by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and it's about a young 20-something woman who talks as much to the camera. She speaks her inner thoughts to the camera, as well as sort of trying to navigate this slightly messy life. And it's very funny. It's quite rude, it's just brilliantly observed.
Do you sometimes watch it and think, goodness, I'm the British High Commissioner to New Zealand. I shouldn't be watching this. It's a bit naughty.
Oh, God, no. We all need time to just relax and chill out, don't we? So, yeah, it's all about finding the right TV. And, yeah, the other TV that I've really enjoyed recently is Chernobyl. Did you see that?
Yeah.
I mean, it was white hot, terrifying. And I think what I found so fascinating about it, so this is the series about the Chernobyl nuclear explosion, it was just so brilliant in terms of how you don't respond to a crisis. You know, at every stage, it was almost a masterclass in how you don't respond to a terrible crisis. You know, they didn't gather the information. They didn't think about the welfare of those in the vicinity. They didn't draw on experts. They didn't allow challenge. And, you know, a lot of that, I think, is about the culture that you set. And I hope that nowadays in our cultures, we are much better at dealing with incidents like that or even preventing them in the first place. But it's brilliant TV.
If you did go into politics, would it be Labour or Conservative, do you think?
Oh, I can't say that. And I don't think I ever said I would go into politics, okay. Did I?
Did you know that you were going to get the job of Governor of the Pitcairn Islands when you put your hand up for British High Commissioner to New Zealand?
Yes, I did know that. And it's a really wonderful part of the job. And probably one of the most unusual jobs in the whole of the Foreign Office, actually, because I'm the governor of the Pitcairn Islands. There are four islands. One of them is inhabited and there are 50 people on it. And it's a British overseas territory. So I'm the governor. I need to make sure it's run well. Everything works effectively. And I go there once a year. So I've been there twice already. And it's quite a journey to go there. But it's the most extraordinary privilege to go there and to get to know all the Pitcairners.
You made a video over there recently, which went pretty well. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I did. So it's you can if you Google or if you look at Laura Clark Pitcairn on YouTube, you come up with the film that we made. My husband came with me on my first trip. He took a camera and we made this very short 15-minute film about my journey to Pitcairn because it takes 4 or 5 days to get there. And then, you know, wow. We speak to the islanders and you really get a sense of what's going on there. And I was really just trying to explain it a bit more to people, you know, sort of because it's an extraordinary thing that this human community. So if your listeners don't know the background, Pitcairn was settled by the Bounty Mutineers in 1790. And it was the Bounty Mutineers with some women and men from Tahiti who set up this community. And this community has then existed and survived, often, you know, against the odds since 1790. And they live 2 days away by boat from any other human community. So it's kind of an extraordinary place. And I'm doing my bit, and so is the administrator, so the Foreign Office diplomat who lives on island. We're doing our bit to really, you know, communicate Pitcairn to the world through Twitter, through short films, that sort of thing. And
your interest, I suppose, is that the UK contributes something like $3 million a year in aid to Pitcairn.
Yeah, we do, exactly. And that's about helping to run the island. It's about the shipping service, all that sort of thing. And I'm not apologetic about the amount of aid that we spend on it. It's a British overseas territory. We have a constitutional responsibility for our overseas territories. And the other thing I would say is actually it brings real value. So recently we ran an expedition to Henderson Island, which is one of the four Pitcairn Islands. And Henderson Island, despite being uninhabited, is the most plastic polluted territory in the whole world. And that's because of how the currents work. And so we took an expedition to Henderson Island to do a cleanup job, but also to study the plastic and its impact on the environment. And really then to communicate this, you know, the plight of plastic pollution to the world. And it got this amazing pickup. It was on Fox News in the US. It was in The Guardian and Evening Standard in the UK. Andrea Vance from Stuff here in New Zealand and Ian McGregor went on the expedition. And so I like to say that Pitcairn, even though it's small, is really playing its part on some of these big global issues. And I'm really proud of that.
Nice one. You are officially allowed to call yourself a New Zealander because you have become a fan of Bekaronga.
Yes.
We're going to play a track from here. And why have you chosen this one?
So I chose this because this really reminds me of when I met Toby back in London in, must have been 2002, 2003. And I remember one evening he played it to me and then and I loved it. We both love it. And then we
classic
actually,
move.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? Kiwi boy in London playing Kiwi music.
Yeah.
And then actually it was Toby. Someone sang it at our wedding as well. And it's a lovely piece.
Beautiful. Here it comes. It's called When I See You Smile.
When I see you smile, it feels like I'm falling. It's not for anybody else to know. The way your face could light the bitter dark of every street in every town I'll ever go. It's not for anybody else to know. For anybody else to know. When I see you smile first thing in the morning, it raises curtains on your lazy eyes. Could it be that you and I have the greatest love to ever be? How could this have ever been before? It's not for anybody else to know. For anybody else to know.
Choice, Laura Clark. When I See You Smile by Beck Runga. Laura's in for Bookmarks, talking about a few of her favourite things. Kerry has texted and wants to know if you get extra salary for being governor of Pitcairn. They probably don't break it down like that, do they?
Sadly not. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah.
What sort of currency do they use over there?
They use dollars, New Zealand dollars, or American dollars. You know, they're quite flexible according to what tourists bring and okay. want to pay with. Yeah. And the main industries are tourism, honey, and that's
soap.
Largely it. Soap, yeah, they do make soap. And yeah. coffee, increasingly coffee.
I was just
as well.
Reading about the new female mayor there. Landslide,
yes.
landslide victory
yeah,
for
exactly.
Charlene.
Landslide victory for Char, and she is going to do a great job. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, tell us what happened in Gisborne recently.
What happened in Gisborne? So, yes, well, I, last December, so representatives of Ngāti Oni'oni and of a collective, Ituranga Iwi collective, came to see me. And they are all representing descendants of nine men who were killed by Cook's crew in those very first encounters in Te Rāwhiti in 1769. And they were looking for a process of reconciliation and a greater relationship going forward. And what October was about, I went there on the 2nd of October and I expressed regret for those deaths and really was sort of, you know, expressing, acknowledging the pain of those deaths, acknowledging that pain had been handed on from generation to generation, and also expressing a desire to have a more positive, forward-looking relationship in the future.
Tell me about whose idea was it to express regret in person? Because it's, there are concerns about precedent setting and, it's a politically delicate sort of move. So whose idea was it?
Yeah. So the overall approach, the overall strategy of building the UK's relationship with Māoridom is a sort of UK policy across the board that obviously I'm very invested in. Then the question was, well, how do we do this? And it was felt that the best thing to do was as a personal interaction, because this is about, people to people. It's about that very real human need for a story to be properly heard and acknowledged. And so we agreed that the best thing would be if I went there in person. I took my whānau with me, took my team with me. But it wasn't like we just sort of pitched up and did it. You know, we had been working very closely together with the iwi and working out you know, we were co-designing it, really. You know, what worked. We all had different constituencies, perhaps different sensitivities that we needed to manage. So we very much worked together to work out how we did this engagement, how it would sort of meet our respective needs. And so the relationship was already there in large part when I went. And then I went, and it was important to me that I took my family, my whānau, important that I took quite a large team, really to say, this is really important to us. This is about me representing the British government, and it's about me and my team and my government wanting to acknowledge that pain of the past, so that we can chart a way forward together.
Can you tell me about that moment?
Yeah,
it looks in the photos like a really emotional moment for you.
It was really moving, and what we did was, it was in a way, we had a series of visits, and I heard stories. I heard the stories of, you know, what it felt, and you know, it's always important as diplomats that we know our history. We know. But we need to be always conscious of seeing history from, if you like, in this context, you need to be able to see it from on board the Endeavour, and you need to be able to see it from the beach. But it was sort of brought so much to life. You know, you can know something intellectually, but then to hear these stories that have been passed from generation to generation down, hear about them talking about the loss of the mana and of the rangatiratanga, the leadership of those people who had been killed. So it was very emotional. And I think what I found particularly emotional was the warmth and generosity with which we were received. You know, it was very much an appreciation for what we were doing.
Was that the biggest day emotionally of your job so far?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is definitely the most meaningful thing I've done in my career so far.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, absolutely. I was nervous, but I had a huge amount of support. I was very lucky to have some elders accompany me, support me in that. I have an excellent Maori engagement advisor. I've got a great team. But yeah, I was nervous because it was, you know, wasn't guaranteed that it would, you know, all go smoothly. But yeah, so it felt like a really important thing to do.
Tell us about this track, Pata Pata, by Miriam Makeba.
So I chose this because we spent three brilliant years in South Africa, from 2012 to 2015. I went there with a toddler and a baby. I left with two young kids and another baby. And we used to just chuck everyone in the car. We had a Toyota Land Cruiser and just drive and travel and go on these great road trips. And the landscapes there are huge. And to travel, to drive through all parts. We drove through all the different states of South Africa, you know, visiting different parts, understanding more about it, and with these great soundtracks. And Miriam Makeba is this wonderful South African singer who, of course, was very active during apartheid. And for me, it sort of sums, I hear it and I remember our time in South Africa, but I also, it's a reminder of what an extraordinary country it is, how high the stakes are there in terms of the politics, how much they still have to work through, and what a wonderful and flawed and brilliant country it is. And I just, you know, we play this music and I'm back there in a car looking at these landscapes, looking at the red earth, and I've got these little people in the back who are not yet asserting their desire to listen to Frozen over and over again.
Watch out, the sequel's about to hit as well.
I know.
Okay, here it comes, Pata Pata.
Bye.
RNZ National. Another good choice. Really enjoyed that. Thank you, Laura.
It's great, isn't it?
Hey, what do you read when you're reading for fun?
Mostly novels. I think probably the one that I've just loved most recently was The Porpoise by Mark Haddon.
Yeah.
And it's going to sound bonkers when I describe it, and people will probably be put off. But it's by Mark Haddon, who's a British writer. He wrote The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which
yeah,
I think
quite
is
quite a famous one.
Yeah, exactly. And it is this totally crazy blending of modern Britain and ancient Greece and the tragedy of Pericles. And then there's some really weird stuff around Shakespeare era London. I mean, you know, it sort of does your head in to try and describe it, but it's one of those books that you get so caught up in it, you don't want to do anything else but read a book. And you know, there are some books that are like that. You think, I actually don't need anything else in life. I don't need friends or family or anything. I've just got this book and I don't want to do anything else. Mm. And it's so atmospheric. And I'm doing a terrible job of describing it, but I would just say, read it. And I read it on my way to my most recent trip to Pitcairn. And I read quite a lot of it on the ship, and I had this sort of pretty bad seasickness. So I was partly reading it, partly just lying there. And because a lot of the book is set at sea, it was all kind of muddling up in my head. But it's a really powerful read.
Do you write?
God, no. I'd love to. I would love to write. I'd love to be able to write. But the few times that I've tried, you know, I think I have something in my head and then there's nothing when it tries to get down on paper. And I also don't have much time. But I'd love to be able to actually, you know, write a book, and then you've got a physical thing. You can hit someone over the head with it and say, I wrote that. That's mine. I wrote it. But no, sadly not.
Yeah. I think you get kicked out of the publishing community, by the way, if that's what you use your book for. I wouldn't advise
it. Right, exactly.
What did you study at uni?
I studied German and Russian at Cambridge, and then I did international relations at the London School of Economics.
Uh-huh. Goodness me. So English, German, Russian, and a little bit of Te Reo Māori now.
And some French. I've got to say my Russian is pretty. I wouldn't say my Russian was usable, actually.
So you really had this career in diplomacy in mind, did you? Or some sort of career involving international relations?
Yeah, maybe not so much diplomacy. I just love going abroad. I love living in different countries, getting to know different people. I like learning another language so well that you feel like you operate slightly differently in a different language. I just love all of that. And I got a lot of that from my parents. They were always very international in outlook, even though I spent all of my life in basically the same village, all of my younger years. I always would have loved to be a diplomat, but funnily enough, I never applied for the Foreign Office because I slightly had in my head that they wouldn't let me in, even though on paper I, you know, probably looked right, you know, international relations, languages, Cambridge, all that sort of thing. But I didn't actually apply because I slightly assumed it wouldn't be for me. And then I went on secondment from another government department, and then I ended up staying there.
So what have you learnt about believing in yourself, Laura?
I've learnt that it's a work in progress. I mean, it really is. And even, you know, even now I can have days where I think, oh, my God, they are actually going to find me out. But I have, you know, I spent a lot of time working on, you know, my on sort of trying to tackle imposter syndrome and build my own confidence. And I've made a lot of progress. But I think, you know, I think that a bit of self-doubt is also a very useful thing, because you sort of keep checking in. You think, am I doing the right thing? You consult. And, you know, and then I have sort of various tactics that I use where I do suddenly, when I do suddenly think, oh, my God, I am actually hopeless. I haven't got a clue what I'm doing. And then I've got various things that I can fall back on to reassure myself.
Let's give your podcast a plug.
Oh, thank you. So this is, we're one of the few diplomatic missions to do this. We have our own podcast called Tea with the British High Commission. And we interview a whole range of interesting people, really exploring the connections between the UK and New Zealand. And my recent guests have been James Shaw, talking about zero carbon and a whole load of other things. Simon Bridges. Last year, I spoke to Prime Minister Ardern for International Women's Day.
Is your audience New Zealanders or people back in Britain?
Really anyone who's interested. So I think a lot of New Zealanders, but also in the UK, people who are interested in New Zealand as well. And we try and look at, you know, talk about a whole range of issues.
Do you have your own podcast jingle, Laura?
I think we do have a bit of a jingle. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we do have a bit of a jingle, actually. Right. I can't, but I'm not sure I can sing it to you right now. But we've also done Eddie Izzard and Sam Neill and a whole load, obviously, as you'd expect, sports things like Grant Elliott and others. So so it's quite fun. They're quite short. And if your listeners are interested in more podcast recommendations, then they should just go on iTunes and just search up Tea with the British High Commission.
Good one. Nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too. Thanks for having me on.
And good job, Laura Clark, who's been our Bookmarks guest. She is the British High Commissioner to New Zealand. Oh, and Governor of the Pitcairns.